And am I pronouncing VO correctly?
Perfect.
VO. Okay. In the office, we were saying view for so long, and I was like, so I went and found a video, and I was like, no, guys, like everybody, we need it's VO. Like, stop saying view. I bet you have to spell that a lot.
Well, actually, I mean, I grew up, my family in Buffalo, that we all pronounce it view. It was just kind of like a
Oh.
sort of American sort of pronunciation of it. It was really when I became a professional, like, 93, around there. I had to think about it for a second because people were correcting me on radio stations. So, like, you know how your name is really pronounced, right? It's not VU. VU, it's VO. I was like, yes, because I had taken 3 years of French in high school, so I knew how it was really pronounced. So I decided that then and there, pretty much, like, that's going to be my pronunciation of the name, so I don't get corrected every time.
And classical music folks are sometimes going to be the ones to correct your pronunciation. Fantastic. Well, Jason View, thank you so much for joining us. This is the Fort Collins Symphony Podcast. We're having you here next week to play the Concierto de Aranjuez. That's my kind of half Spanish pronunciation. Speaking of pronunciation, by Rodrigo, could you give us a quick introduction to you and when you started playing guitar?
So I started playing guitar around somewhere either like a couple weeks before or a couple weeks after my 8th birthday. And in Buffalo, where I was born and raised, and I was very, very fortunate to actually start with a founding member of the Buffalo Guitar Quartet and their primary arranger, Jeremy Sparks. So not only did I learn about, classical guitar technique and this kind of thing, and Giuliani right hand exercises and scales and some etudes and this kind of thing, starting out, he also, again, his background as a musician, arranger, composer, I think that really kind of gave sort of rubbed off on me maybe early on. And we would play duos and stuff together out of anthologies, and those were also my earliest chair music experiences too. So it actually like gave a really nice sort of foundation. Jeremy gave me a really nice foundation for studying.
Fantastic. While our listeners are wondering, could you explain why there's a tuba in the background? You're at your studio at Curtis,
I'm at my
right?
studio here in Cleveland at Cleveland Institute of
Cleveland,
Music.
excuse me. Excuse me.
Cleveland Institute of Music. I was just at Curtis Institute of Music like 2 days ago in Philadelphia. So yeah, I'm kind of in and out, bopping around, playing concerts and lots of travel. So yeah.
And what was it about the guitar that drew you to guitar, and especially classical guitar? I'm really curious about that.
Well, I was originally drawn to the guitar before my first lesson with Jeremy was, really basic, mainly because of the Beatles. My mother had four Beatle albums on LPs, and lots of rock and roll singles as well, lots of soul and R&B singles, Aretha Franklin, Wilson Pickett, a lot of the Atlantic Stax stuff, and then also the smoother Motown sound, Temptations, Four Tops, Supremes, this kind of thing. So that was a lot of, I mean, her record collection was really very dance, stuff you could dance to, right? The Beatles, I fell in love with immediately, like at age three. I just thought three, four, five around that time. And so the sound of the guitar was, of course, very prominent, particularly in the early stuff. And my dad was actually more into horns because he was a trumpet player for a little bit, and he was in a professional drum corps for a little bit in his 20s before he was married. And so he liked a lot of brass ensembles and stuff, a lot of jazz kind of stuff, like trumpet players like Clifford Brown, and Miles Davis, Dizzy Gillespie, and kind of like the larger ensembles like Pete Rugolo. There was this record that he and I used to play a lot on the turntable, J and K plus seven, nine trombones, a nine trombone jazz ensemble with band, with like rhythm section band behind him. That's KK, was that K, Kai Wine, Kai Winding, and Jada Johnson. A lot of stuff like that, kind of left of the dial. Chico Hamilton, like kind of a little left of the dial kind of jazz. So that was kind of my background, but I just, so I had, there was music around, and I really dove into my parents' record collection. So I think really primarily the motivation was not even so much guitar, probably just listening to music and falling in love with music at a very early age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. I always find it so interesting when people end up playing classical, but they got into music through like music on the radio first, right. and then
Top 40 was like on my clock radio, yeah. Right? Every morning. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I was
a lot of that stuff too. I liked some of the songs then. I still like some of the songs now. But really more for me, I mean, I was lucky to actually start with classical guitar lessons. Mm-hmm. So that the first playing, practicing, daily practicing thing I had was like on the plucking with the right hand and arpeggios and stuff like that. So
Yeah. Did I read right that you were the first classical musician to play a Tiny Desk Concert for NPR?
Yeah, that's true.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's really something. At the time, I didn't really think anything of it because the setting was so informal and I hadn't heard of it. And they said, well, yeah, we've had some kind of like bluegrass and Americana and some, you know, singer-songwriters and stuff, but we'd like you to be the first classical musician on it. Because I had the relationship with him before as a young artist in residence and such. So yeah, it was great. That was a lot of fun.
That's fantastic. I'll have to go check that out. I'll put a link
in it. I did that gig on the morning or afternoon of a triple with Annapolis Symphony playing the same concerto, Rodrigo Concerto de Aranjuez. So I rented a car in Annapolis, drove down to DC, you know, parked it in a garage, did the gig, got back in time, you know, with enough time to eat dinner and do the first of the weekend performances. So.
Wow. Well, and one of the questions I always ask is, what's your relationship with this piece? Usually people have played it before. So can you talk about the Rodrigo Concerto for us?
Yeah. I mean, my first relationship, I think my first thing with it was listening to it, you know, really listening to it, the John Williams recording in particular on Columbia CBS, I listened to that quite a bit in high school. When I came here, actually in this very building to study with John Holmquist after high school, I was like, well, I'd like to learn Concerto de Aranjuez. And he said, okay, pump the brakes. They didn't say pump the brakes back then, but like he was basically like that, like, okay, all right, sure, okay. We're going to work on your technique, you know, on some of your mechanics. You're very, very, very fast. You have enough, you have speed and facility and musicianship, and it's like, it's all happening, but you got to take care of like, you know, kind of take care of your golf swing, right? You can be playing for a very long time, right? Because it's pretty easy to get injured on guitar, you know, on classical guitar.
Oh, really?
Because it's pretty heavy on the hands and such. So you want to have, you know, so he taught me a lot about efficiency, economy of movement, not pressing real hard in the left hand, and then most importantly, I think the mechanics of my right hand, particularly the thumb. And my ring finger, that's a very important relationship. So, so we got that out of the way probably in a few years. And then he said, like, Concerto de Aranjuez, you can do, we'll work on that your senior year, which is exactly what happened. I actually ended up winning the Guitar Foundation of America International Competition, which for our instrument is kind of like winning the Queen Elizabeth in violin or the Tchaikovsky in piano. Like, that's a really big one to win. So I took a year off of school to do the tour. The first prize is a year-long tour, 53 cities, in my case, sometimes more for other winners and such, as that competition progressed. And then I came back to school, and sure enough, I had a Concerto de Aranjuez gig with Cleveland Orchestra. Which was amazing. Like, for a lot of like these daytime concerts, I played the third movement, just third movement only, 10 times. And so that was my first professional engagement, you know, with the piece then, which was a really wonderful way to do it with like one of the greatest orchestras, you know, one of the great orchestras of the world. So very, very fortunate to have had that experience.
Did you do a full performance shortly after that, or was there a bit of a gap?
Yeah, there was, well, there's a little bit of a gap. I think my first full thing was a local orchestra, a Cleveland area orchestra on the east side, and we did the whole thing there. And that was, again, another kind of big sort of milestone for me, was to learn and perform the whole thing. So
yeah.
I probably played it around somewhere between 170 and 200 times, actually, by this point. So there's probably not a piece that in my repertoire I've performed more than that.
Yeah. Well, and it's one of those pieces that people may not know by name, but they may know the music somewhere. Could you kind of give us an introduction to the piece and its history for those that haven't read our program notes yet?
Sure. Well, it was written in 1939 by a great Spanish composer, Joaquin Rodrigo. Now, Rodrigo wrote most of his guitar works for Andres Segovia. So some of your patrons and such may recognize that name. He's probably the most important guitarist of the 20th century, I would say, almost without question. I would throw Julian Bream in there as well, who's a fan of Julian Bream too. But music fans or fans of the concerto assume that this was written for Andres Segovia, but it was not. Rodrigo's second concerto, which I've also played many times, Fantasía para un Gentil Hombre, Fantasy for a Gentleman, was the second concerto, and that was written by request of Segovia. This is actually written for Regino Sainz de la Maza, a wonderful Spanish guitarist and a wonderful composer of guitar pieces as well, and performer. And it was actually written during a holiday, basically their honeymoon, a honeymoon with his wife, Rodrigo's wife. And they were staying at the Palacio Real de Aranjuez, which was a 16th century palatial grounds, with a garden and all sorts of things. I've personally never been there yet. And they were basically spending their honeymoon there. And so he was inspired. The first movement you hear, he says, the quote is, I'm paraphrasing here, but like the quote is, I want the listener to sort of hear the birds singing. I want them to smell the magnolias, and I want them to hear the gushing and experience the gushing of the fountains. And so a lot of those whooshes that you hear from the orchestra are the gushing of the fountains, and the things where, and there's these a couple moments where I'm doing a nice little bird-like trill on my guitar with flute, and that's the birds and such. And so you're being placed in the garden there. And the third movement is a court dance, which is meant to, like, which is very common with Rodrigo. He harkens back to earlier times. I think it was the 18th century. It was refurbished by Philip II. But he's kind of going back to 16th century, kind of like a more of an ancient music where it's like a court dance, but being a modernist at that time, with some kind of some off kilter meter, like the meter's not very regular the whole time, but it does sort of have this kind of courtly, sort of regal, you know, kind of atmosphere to it. And it's very lively, and a lot of guitarists consider it the most difficult movement because it's a veritable obstacle course of technical challenge. And then that brings us to the second movement. The second movement is really the one that people recognize, you know, people that don't even listen to classical music sometimes recognize it. They may recognize it from Miles Davis's album Sketches of Spain, where the whole of side one is the second movement of Concerto de Aranjuez, arranged by Gil Evans with Miles as solo trumpet player, and then, or, you know, Led Zeppelin in their 1977, we used to riff on it. They would just kind of go off on a lengthy jam with it. And of course, we've heard it in a lot of movies and commercials, you know, over the last 50 years. It reached almost a zeitgeist. It kind of went beyond into pop culture in a sense. And it is truly one of the most beautiful melodies of the 20th century, and which is why it's one of the most popular concertos of the 20th century. Not just guitar concertos, like 20th century concertos on any instrument. It's really high on people's request lists and such.
Yeah, that second movement's on a lot of like classical 101 like this is the stuff you should know.
Yep.
Well, thank you so much for the introduction. We're looking forward to having you here next week. I'm curious, as a performer, how do you want your audiences to leave the hall? Do you have a philosophy, or is that something you think about?
No, I mean, not much of a philosophy. I mean, it's nice if they remember the performer, but really I feel my main job as a performer and a musician is that they remember the music and they remember the feeling that they have, because that second movement can be very, very, very moving for people. It was also written, because that movement was written kind of in a, I mean, almost like it kind of sort of, it came out of him on the piano, because it was on the occasion, well, a very unfortunate occasion for he and his wife, a miscarriage, which would have been their first child. And so this outpouring of grief actually is the second movement. And the harmonics, the guitar harmonics at the end that float up to these very high notes through just these really high harmonics in the guitar, apparently, according to Pepe Romero, the Spanish guitarist, Rodrigo told him that is the boy's soul floating up to heaven, which is it's a very moving piece of music, even if you don't know that, but it makes it all the more thing. So it's really like my job as a performer is just to kind of, in a way, get out of the way and just play what's there. That's my approach to everything, to whether it be Bach or all the Bach suites and sonatas that I've played over the years, or, you know, Spanish pieces, Latin American stuff, is just to kind of do what's there. And I have a lot of faith that the music does everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there a pause between the second and third movement? I feel like I would need a moment before a courtly day. Before
you kind of read the room. Yeah, exactly. Because it goes, it is supposed to be fairly ataca, right? You kind of freeze. There is this sort of a stagecraft thing of, like, you play that last note and you can feel people, like, a lot of times are not even breathing. Like, yeah, they're just frozen. And then dun, 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 dun. The guitarist starts the third movement by themselves.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's actually a very, very brilliant transition into that. But yeah, we try to sort of read the room. I mean, that's kind of left up to the soloist to read the atmosphere. You don't want to wait too long, but you don't want to lose the moment either.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, Jason, thank you so much for that intro. We're so excited to have you here in Fort Collins next week. Any final things you want our listeners to know or think about?
Come to the concert if you can and enjoy. I'll bring some CDs and such. I know that we don't sell so many CDs these days that much anymore, but I'll be bringing some and meeting folks after the performance on November, is it 4?
4, yeah.
Great. So hope to see you there.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
I hear Ride of the Valkyries.
And we hear that all the time here.